Welcome back to another episode of Overexerted, a Lorcana podcast brought to you by Two Tired Dads. I'm Charles.
And I'm Ben. And today we are joined by a special guest, Zan Sayed.
Hello, hello.
Zan, we're really excited to have you here. How are you doing today, bud?
Hey, I'm doing good. How about you guys?
Doing great. Yeah, getting more excited every day with all these announcements, so we'll see how it goes, I guess.
Yeah. Did you guys try to get into the Atlanta Challenge?
No, we're both in Northwest, so quite a bit of a trek.
Got it.
Looking forward to the Seattle event, though. Definitely going to try to get that. I heard the Atlanta event sold out essentially immediately.
Yeah, 2 minutes. Yep.
That is wild. I certainly hope they said that they might increase depending on demand. I certainly feel like demand showed that they should increase the number of attendees allowed.
Yeah, I only know one local person that got in. So majority, yeah.
Did you get in?
No, I did not. Yeah, I did not.
Get in. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Especially being the first one, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to travel. And a number of people will probably try to do 3, 4, maybe all 6, you know?
Yeah. My goal was to just play in the Atlanta one and just knock it out first try, just make top 8. And then I wouldn't have to worry about traveling. But it seems as though we're going to have to play the lottery if they just keep it at 512. Apparently 40,000 people tried to. I think there's bots included in that. But 40,000 bots and humans tried to get a ticket. So it's kind of wild.
Yeah, that is wild. I wonder what the process is to try to prevent botting and scalping of these tickets. I heard they were non-transferable, but I don't really know what that entails. Like, because I can imagine I can buy 2 tickets, one for me and one for my friend. So I don't understand how a ticket could be non-transferable. I don't know.
I don't think you can buy one for another person. They are like super serious about it. They're like, there was like a Twitter post or Discord post where they communicated directly with somebody. It's non-transferable, and then you can be like, you can get in trouble otherwise. Like,
oh, wow.
And offenses. Like, yeah. So I think that the only exception would be is like if you're buying it for your partner, you know?
Okay.
That would make sense.
I recently saw a post where somebody said that a person on Facebook said that they had tons of extra passes, and if anybody wanted one, they would be willing to sell it. And then somebody's like, well, how's that going to work? And somebody else said, oh, you can actually change the name on the account to be whatever the person who's attending is. So if they had like multiple different accounts with different names, then essentially they could do it. And I'm like, just link it up to somebody's driver's license or student ID or something like that. And it's like, well, you show up and it's not linked to your ID. Tough. You're out. And make it so you can't change the ID number. Like, it's as easy as that. I know a lot of events that I've gone to are like, you have to link this up with like your name right off the bat at time of purchase. So,
yeah, I wish they would do that. I mean, I think that
you also can't trust everything you read on Facebook.
Yeah.
No, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, the best would be if they were communicating directly and assuring people that, you know, during the Lorecast, they said that if 512 fills up, that they would, that people shouldn't worry, that they'll have,
They could accommodate more. Yeah.
So, I mean, as far as Atlanta goes, I mean, there's like Magic events have easily been, you know, 1,000, 1,500 people, even 2,000 people at certain points. So, it's not like we don't have the venues. Even the venues that they're using can accommodate that many people.
Yeah.
More than 512. So it's just about them wanting to do it, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think they look at Magic putting up those kind of numbers, 1,000, 1,500, and they go, well, we're not Magic. Like, we shouldn't expect to put up those same bigger numbers. But it's also the first big event.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, I'm kind of spoiled because of Atlanta. Like, a lot of the biggest tournaments have been here. Like, I've already played in like 13 Lorcana tournaments, and like 10 of them were in Atlanta because of CCS. And so there's been like so many Magic events. Like on my Twitter, I see the Magic events and I see the numbers that they're filling. And honestly, Lorcana's already starting to beat majority of those tournaments. Like that 8K was profitable for a TO. At this point, it, like, you know, Magic TOs are lucky to break even, you know? So I just think that the economy support and the TO support that Lorcana is going to give is just going to be a different animal altogether.
I said to somebody when they said 40,000, I said, I don't even think there's 40,000 like actual competitive Lorcana players, like maybe in the world, but in North America, I don't see there being 40,000 people who think, yeah, I could go to this and actually win.
Oh, definitely not. But I don't think that this event is catered towards only the competitive. I think that a lot of people want to win these cards, right? Collectors want them as well. And just casuals want them. Like everybody wants them, right?
You get a rad Dragonfire just for showing up.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
which means that card better be at least worth $50 online, right?
I think it's definitely going to be $50. It'll probably be declining after every challenge, just because there'll be more and more. But that's probably one of their thought processes, is that we don't want to increase the 512 because we don't want to give out more of these cards because they lose more value.
I don't know that they care about the secondary market that much.
I don't know. It feels like they want full control of a lot of different things. Just because, like, I've never heard a TO be concerned about, like, IDs, right? So, like, the best of two is definitely around, like, based around some things that they want to control. So it's interesting. Like, best of two is, like, I think a much worse system in majority of cases. And after when I saw a lot of the math models, I was like, oh yeah, this is like going to be weird, because it does reward the luck of like being able to go 2-0 a bunch of times. And I think that you do have to be like running super hot, like, in order to be able to do that. But yeah, I mean, it would be cool if you could go 1-1 in every single round and still make day two. If that's the case, then I think I'm on board with it. But it doesn't make sense with how many you get 3 points for. Yeah, if you just
I don't think that's possible.
Class, like 3-1. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because what you're saying is like, so, that's a middle of the road player, and 200 people, you know, if it's 512. 260 people are not making day two. I think the plan is to...
I think they said they wanted to eliminate more than half the player pool.
I assume it's a cut to 64.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a ton. Dang.
You're definitely right that you do have to be hot. I don't know. I did actually at my 1K yesterday get to speak to some people who had the opportunity to try it out under NDA. And they seem pretty happy with it. They thought it was a good direction for the game. But it's interesting to hear your side. So you really don't think it's going to be an ideal situation. Is that right?
Yeah, I don't. I thought I saw some Twitter posts as well that were like, they only played like 4 rounds, right? So I think that when you really get to see how it plays out in 10 rounds, it's a lot more brutal, right? Like, I think, like, let's say you win 2-0 your first round, it's like very easy to just go 1-1 every single round, just because a lot of these matchups, like being on the play, is a good enough advantage over one game that going 1-1 is the most likely outcome for majority of people, you know?
Yeah.
And there's like no way to like combat combat that. I think that like in these tournaments, so I was like 60-40 in terms of like my die rolls. So I was losing majority of my die rolls, but it was still close to 50, I mean 60-40. So if I roll 10 times, you know, I lose six of them and I win four of them. And one of the other rules that they had was in the top eight, it wasn't by seeding. So in like Magic, if you're first seed and you're playing against eighth seed, you would get the
option
first. Yeah, exactly. And so they didn't give me the option. So like in the finals, even though I was first seed, I lost the die roll and I was on the draw in the finals. And so over the course of three games, I was still able to win some of these games. And I would say a majority of my games were 2-1, or it was like close to 50-50. And I can't imagine feeling the pressure of like, hey, there are three rounds left and I have to go 2-0 in the last three rounds to have a chance at making it. I feel like that's a lot less control, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would rather not win another die roll and like mm-hmm. play best of three, because I feel like you have a much higher chance at pulling off the two wins there, you know, and getting the 3 points.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of counterintuitive, right? Because you're saying you understand that the die roll is hugely important, and of course this two game situation does take the die roll out. You just need to steal a few games where you lost the die roll, or you're not the one going first, rather, right?
But the thing that we're not talking about, it's about the order in which you win the games, right? So let's say you play four games, right? It's like it's more important that you go to, like, if you played four games and you lost two and won two, right? It's much better that you went 2-0, 0-2 than to go 1-1, 1-1.
Yes.
So the order of it ends up changing the point totals, which just is like a purely luck thing. The other way you can look at it is like if you think about it in terms of basketball, right, there's three-pointers and two-pointers. And we know at this point, you know, like having three-pointers is kind of like a cheat code. Except for in this, you can only shoot one free throw or shoot three-pointers, right? And if you're missing all your three-pointers, you have zero chance of making it. But there's many tournaments where I start off like 0-2, but I'm able to rattle off seven wins in a row and make day two of a Magic tournament, and have lost like one game in each of those matches. So there's like more of like a comeback factor. I'm not sure if we start off 0-3 in this tournament, right, that we're going to be able to like rattle off wins like that.
It's not going
2-0, but
you're going to have to go 2-0 to do it, right? But I think, I don't know, I haven't looked at the numbers. I feel like because you can go 2-0 and get that extra point, that there is actually more of a comeback factor potential in this format. I haven't looked at the math, but it feels to me that like, well, I could lose, you know, two or even three rounds. And then if I can get hot and I can... First of all, if you lose your first three rounds, the opponents you're going to play for the next couple rounds are going to be pretty easy opponents that also lost their first three rounds. You just need to start going 2-0 against them.
Yeah, but it's beyond hot. That's what I'm trying to say. It's like, okay, so let's say I need to win the next seven rounds, right? I need to win the next seven rounds. And so what do I have to do in this 2-0 scenario, right? In this 2-0 scenario, I have to go 14-0. Is it harder to go 14-0 or let's say 14-7?
Yeah, I just don't think you will have to go 14-0. I think you can, to get to a point where you have to go 2-0 the rest of the time, I think we'll be a deeper place in the tournament than where in Swiss you would already in best of three you would already mathematically be eliminated. You could walk home, right? Whereas you can get a little deeper on a bad day and still have at least a chance to go 2-0 and make it to top cut. I doubt there will be a lot of people that are all like 2-0 all day. You know what I mean? Like, that's going to be the exception, I would expect, rather than the rule. Because as soon as you go 2-0 twice, now you're playing against people who went 2-0 twice. That's going to be a really tough opponent early on in the tournament.
Yeah. What I think will happen is it will be like a King of the Hill situation where the person who's going 2-0 is going to be the anomaly and is going to start getting paired down against people who are not even in the same bracket as them, right? So, well, like,
he'll have to, you know. But they'll be close. There'll be people who had a number of 2-0s.
I'm interested to try.
I do think it does solve some problems. I did a 1K yesterday, and two of my matches ended up being draws. And I don't feel like either, like, it was an intentional situation. It was just I was playing Ruby Sapphire Dimes. They were playing, in both cases, Sapphire Steel, and the games just take forever. And there was just both of us in both cases, we each picked up a game, and there was just really no chance to complete game three. I do like that this kind of solves that problem, and also solves the problem of people intentionally trying to draw out a game to get to time.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. That's what they're trying to control, that they don't like intentional draws. That's like,
yeah, but I don't think anybody likes that.
I mean, I think it's good for the game.
Well, okay, I guess let me rephrase that. Intentional draws where both people agree is not really what I'm referring to. I'm more talking where your opponent realizes they're not going to win, so they're going to play slow to get a draw instead of an L. Well,
that's just cheating. So that's called slow play. So you just call the judge and you say, hey, this person is slow playing me. And the judge has to determine whether that's cheating. So there's intentional draw where both players can agree to draw before the game even starts. Then there's unintentional draw, which is when your case, right, where you guys both finished one game and then couldn't finish the third and couldn't determine who was going to win. So that's a draw. And then there's cheating, which is someone believes that they're not going to win, so they're going to slow play you. And as soon as you catch your opponent playing slow, you call the judge and say, hey, my opponent took 4 minutes on this turn. And you can stop them from doing that.
Yeah. And to be clear, I don't think that was the case in either of my draws. I mean, by the time we got to start game three, there was maybe 15 minutes left on the clock, actually less for sure. And when you're playing that control mirror, it's just really hard to wrap up a game in that amount of time. Actually, yeah, there's definitely not. It was like 10 minutes or less each time. One laughably even had like 6 minutes left. It was like, why are we even going to try? But let's do it. Let's see if we can knock out a game in 6 minutes.
Yeah, at set one and set two, I was definitely struggling with time management. But I felt like in that time, there wasn't things that were like getting you lore quickly, right? Like now we have GOAT, and then of course you have most likely have Bounce GOAT, right? Like,
If you're playing Amethyst, yeah.
And then in my case, I have Flute. Right. In Blue's case, they have Dime. Right. So yes. And then now we're getting like new cards like Goofy. Right. Which is the 2/4 rush, gain 2 lore if it challenged a character this turn. So with those things being implemented, I think that once people know what they're supposed to be doing. Right. So like once tournaments become a normal thing, once like one or two challenges happen and people make content about it, people will realize, oh, like, for example, I always untap all my items and all my inkwell during my opponent's turn. And I, like, my mindset is like, okay, I'm going to try to take 25 minutes and I'm going to give my opponent 35 minutes, because as long as I untap all my stuff during their turn, and then another thing is put my cards down, my hand down, and I put a dice on it representing how many cards are in my hand. The reason why is because the most commonly asked question in paper is how many cards are in your hand. And if you answer that just by doing that, I realize you save like up to 5 minutes just on that. And then if you're untapping your inkwell every single time over the course of 3 games, that ends up being another 5 minutes. And so
So
I just realized, oh, if this became like a norm in the community, I don't think that majority of people would be going to time while these cards are getting printed, right? Like set 4 comes out and red now all of a sudden has ways to gain lore really fast. So in set 1, it made sense. We were doing like this weird broom loop trying to end the game, and there was no other ways to get lore other than with characters, right? So
yeah,
or like Aladdin challenging a character. So like, I think that was a thing that was naturally going to be fixed by their amazing game design. So
yeah, so more you just feel like the game can be sped up through the card design, which is fair. That's totally fair. I don't think we're there yet. And I mean, a control mirror is still going to be a grindy control mirror. Like, yeah, you can have flutes, but if items are hot and, you know, item destruction is also hot, I don't know. That's what happened in my matches, is my dimes got destroyed pretty quick.
I completely understand. Like, I've had games where 3 of my flutes got blown up, and yeah, but like, I mean, like the places that where you're going to really see it is like going to be 2-day tournaments. Right. And so,
yeah,
the 8K was like a 2-day tournament. I went to time 0 times. And
that's good. That's good. Yeah. What were you playing?
I was playing Yellow Steel.
Yellow Steel. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Steel Song, baby.
Yeah. I played Steel Song. I ended up, so day one was going to be 7 rounds, and then there was going to be an 8th round on day 2, and then a cut to top 8. So it was basically a cut to top 64. So it was 226 players, cut to top, to top 64. And then there was 1 round, and then it was cut to top 8. And so I went 7-0 day one, and that made me the only undefeated player after 7 rounds. And then day 2, I intentionally drew the 8th round because I was going to be guaranteed first seed, and there was no advantage in, like, I think my opponent might have played it out if seed mattered, right? Like, in that case, if first seed got to go first, there was an incentive for us to play, but the rules kind of incentivized us to draw, right? Because there was no, like, pro in us playing it out. Like, I couldn't be any more first than I could be, and my opponent didn't get any advantage of beating me and becoming first, right? And so drew the 8th round, and then I was trying to get everybody to split if people were interested, because I wanted to play, there was a 2K in that same day. And so if we split the top 8, the 8K, then we could all go play in the 2K. But there were a couple of players who didn't want to split. So played the first round of top 8, won, then won top 4, and then won the finals. And my opponent, again, I wanted to split with my opponent in the finals, and my opponent was like, no. And so We had to dream crush him. And so ended up just having the perfect tournament, right? 10 wins, one intentional draw, and yeah, perfect tournament.
Yeah, that's incredible.
I think if somebody said to me after I'd played like cards for two straight days, if they're like, hey, do you want to split this 4K each? I'd be like, yeah, done. No problem. Like I didn't even pay 4K on this deck. I'm good to go. And I mean, like best case scenario, you walk out with 8K.
Yeah, well, it was
good scenario. Well, you not, walk out with four. Worst case, you walk out with nothing.
It's not 8K to number one. First of all, it's. Yeah. Can we ask what your first place prize was?
My first place was 2K. So basically, second place was 1K. So basically, we were playing for $1,000.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, those big stakes. But if you split,
then it would have been 1,500. Yeah. So basically, 8K is the total prize pool, and they paid it out to top 32.
Oh, okay. I thought it'd just be top eight.
Some tournaments do it top heavy, but I think that when the entry is like $60, I think it's nice that top 32 at least got $75. So they got to make $15 or
at least get their entry fee back plus a little.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So
enough to go buy a couple packs.
Yeah.
Now, do you like cracking packs or do you just buy singles?
So I mean I do like cracking packs, but I think I try to restrain myself from doing it. But I did splurge a little bit yesterday and I bought one of these and along came Zeus, the little fancy enchanted version, and then I got a Chernabog.
Ooh
man.
Boom.
Nice.
Enchanted Chernabog.
Enchanted Chernabog.
For our listeners. Not just Chernabog. We wouldn't be oohing a regular Chernabog, but an enchanted one. Very cool.
Always got to ooh the enchanteds.
Now, Zan, do you play with your enchanteds?
I'm going to be playing with at least, and then along came Zeus. I haven't found a shell that Chernabog actually fits in, but I will, if he fits well in a deck, I will play him.
You don't think he's a good addition to Steel Song just for a post wheel 9/9?
In the tournament I was playing Hades, and basically that was like
they don't go together.
Yeah, they don't go together. So I had to play Hades, and I went with Hades because what I realized was, you know, Ariel dies a lot, right? Mm-hmm. And so my whole plan is like, oh, if I cast Ariel a lot, I'll find all of the songs that I want, right? And so they always kill it, and Hades is the best way to punish it. So so I ended up playing that loop. The other thing I realized was I wanted to be able to win against purple red if I didn't cast A Whole New World. Mm-hmm. And I know that if you think about season one, set one, there was a tournament. It was an Apex Invitational, and there was this blue yellow deck that ended up winning the tournament. But for majority of that set / format, purple red was the best deck. Mm-hmm. But blue yellow ended up crushing it, and the reason why I believe that it crushed it was the Hades loop. And so I knew that Atlanta was like super densely purple red. Like every tournament that we went to early on, they were all purple reds, and I also played purple red in the first five tournaments I played at CCS. And
that makes a lot of sense for paper, right? Like everybody's got the cards. It's like if you've been going to tournaments, you have those cards. The new cards are pretty affordable, right? It's not like, oh, I need these new legendaries.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that you're going to see that a lot of tournaments.
Exactly. I mean, you hit the perfect dot, which is price matters, right? Like, since we have Pixelborn, people, if people are going to invest, they're going to invest it in purple red. It has the best statistics from set one, two, and three. And then it's the most affordable deck, right? Madam Mim, I think, was in the starter deck. And then Be Prepared, for some reason, have never shot up when I think that they should be at least $10 more than they are. I think that they're like 15. And that card is just incredible, but it's just not, I guess, not strong that thematically. So its price has never gone up. And so
no, it's pretty crazy. I agree with you. It is a regular rare, so
Yeah, I don't know why. Oh, I guess because it's a regular rare. And along, and then Along Came Zeus is like $80 as well. The enchanted one is $80. And I'm like, I can't imagine playing Steel and not playing four of these. It's such an incredible card.
Yeah. What first actually got you interested in like Lurkana? Like, are you a Disney fan, or you just kind of went from Magic and jumped into Lurkana as a new ground floor game kind of?
Yeah, definitely a Disney fan, but I mean, Magic is the card game that got me interested in card games in general. And then when I heard, I think someone from Lurkana, one of the developer people, worked on Arena, and that this game was supposed to be similar to Magic. And I saw the D23, the Club D23,
the promos,
yeah.
Yeah.
I tried to get my hand on one of those Mickeys. I went to Frankincense out in LA, and tried to get one of those Mickeys, and I was about to buy one for I think like $3,000 or something, and it was already at $5,000, and I like shook the hands, and I was trying to send the PayPal, but the PayPal wouldn't go through, and while the PayPal wasn't going through, they looked it up, and then they like canceled the deal, so I didn't get a chance to get that Mickey. I really wanted to get my hands on the D23, but then I can't justify spending, like, if it was $3,000 I was totally done, but $5,000 just too much. Because I felt like
even at three, there's no chance I can run that by my wife.
Yeah.
I mean, if it makes you feel any better, I had a chance to get one at $200 and I was like, I'll wait. It'll probably go down.
It did go down. It did go down, but not from
and then shot right up.
So, yeah, I wanted to get my hands on that. And I was just really generally interested in the way the cards were worded. And I felt like it was going to be like Magic. And then when it ended up coming out, my best friend and I bought the starter decks and just played against each other and just fell in love with the game. I mean, Pixelborn was a huge reason why. So there's a lot of TCGs that come out. I think Lurkana is special in the fact that the economy is boosted, right? Like before you get to like pro play or competitive play, the economy needs to be set, right? Like there needs to be people who are interested in the art, who are interested in collecting, who are interested in the lore, just the overall brand. And Lurkana does that, I think, better than anybody else. So sold my Magic collection and now I'm all in on.
You're all in. Yeah. Have you sold any of your Lurkana collection to get Star Wars Unlimited?
I have not. I would be surprised if, I mean, I think Star Wars is obviously a really strong IP, but I don't, like, I think one of the missing pieces is it doesn't yet have, like, a strong Pixelborn yet.
Mm-hmm. And, I heard that it did.
I did hear about it, but my friend who was trying to get me to play it said it was nowhere near Pixelborn even on day one.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I was like, okay, once it gets to Pixelborn on day one level, let me know and I'll try it out. So that's one of like the preconditions I think that exist for a game to be successful.
One thing that I loved about this game, and I, as a also Magic player, I'm sure you can relate, was my biggest gripe with Magic was lands and how drawing too few or too many can just decide a game, especially if you're late game top deck mode and you're just like, I just need anything, and you like draw a land. It just feels so bad. So I love the way they design the resource system in this game.
Oh yeah, just completely revolutionary. And I think it's just Magic and Lurkana are very similar, but I think that this is just the natural evolution. I think that Magic had 30 years to figure out how to evolve its mana-based system and try out different things, but it refused to evolve in its natural progression, and I think Lorcana now gets to own it, you know.
Yeah, they tried things, but nothing ever really stuck, right? Like, they tried dual side cards that are land on one side. They tried, you know, lands that can become creatures, but they never really went all in. It was always felt like they dipped their toes into a new mechanic to try and address it, but it never sticks around. It's like, we're going to try this for a set, and then, you know, it's still the same old thing.
Yeah, they weren't really, really willing to jump into the deep end of the pool. And that's what it kind of took, you know? And, like, they had a monopoly, right? And I think that people just started taking chunks out of it, right? Hearthstone was the first to take a major chunk out of it, but Blizzard as a whole has just failed. So Hearthstone kind of vanished. But, I mean, Lorcana's here to stay. As long as...
Yeah, I think so, too.
They just let people play the way that they want to play, you know. If they listen to that, then I think it will be fine. Otherwise, I think that I do think that Lorcana has the potential of becoming a Nintendo where they're against their fans, you know, like against their fans playing the way that the fans want to play, you know.
Yeah. Now, I did want to ask you, I think the big elephant in the room with Lorcana, it's kind of on everyone's, you know, it's like the hot talking point. We even heard it mentioned in the Lorecast, is the going first advantage. It does feel too strong, in my opinion, currently. And I wanted to ask you, what do you think should be done about that? Should it be a rule change? Or do you think it's something they should try to address in card design? Just kind of want to hear your opinion on what should we do? Or should we just accept that?
So the first thing you have to look at is the way the data is collected, right? And that is a statistic that is for Pixelborn as a whole, right? So I think that now that we have hardcore mode, hardcore ranked mode on Pixelborn, if you were to take the top 25 and look at their statistics, I think that what you would see is a very different statistic, right? Like I said, in this tournament where I ended up not losing a single match, I was on the draw more than I was on the play, right? And if you were to just purely look at those statistics, you would say it is very unlikely that someone is going to just never lose, right? And so with that being said, if you looked at the top 25, I think that the number is probably closer to 55% win percentage on the play and 45 on the draw, right? And I think that it has more to do with people still learning what their role is, how their role changes, right? And in Lorcana, as opposed to Magic, in Magic, you're more locked in to what your role in your deck is because you have a lot less cards. In Lorcana, you have almost twice as many cards because you don't have like basic lands, right? If you think about like an aggro deck, it'll have 20 lands, 20 mountains. Those are minimum. Nothing.
That's low, even. Yeah.
Yeah. They're not cards at all, right? And so if you think about aggro decks in this format, like I would argue that Yellow Steel is an aggro deck. But it's a multi-dimensional aggro deck where I can play it like an aggro deck, but I can also play it as a control deck or I can play it as a mid-range deck. And I think that majority of decks have, almost all of the decks, tier one decks, have that multi-dimensional element to them. And so when you're on the draw, people don't mulligan properly. People don't identify their role properly, and that causes them to have those absurd win rates. And I think that will change over time.
Okay. So essentially what I'm hearing is it's really a non-issue and more of just a learning curve for the community.
Well,
at the top end, you said it is 55-45. Is that not a problematic percentage?
No, you have to think about it like chess, right? So in chess, I think it's right now 51, 49, and that is, I think, from the Grandmasters, the top percentage of the game. So I think that as I think that it will remain 55-45 in this game, just because there's more inherent variance to a card game, and you're just going to get more of an advantage. And they're going to continue to print cards that gain you lore and will probably stay at 55-45. I don't think we're ever going to make it to 51-49 because, I mean, our game is more, has more pieces than just, you know, black and white and the standard chess pieces.
Yeah,
you know?
And there is actual randomness evolve. I do like the comparison to chess. It's actually a great example because your role really does change when you're playing white piece versus black. And I do think that you're right that a lot of players, maybe even including myself, are not properly considering how things are different right from the mulligan with going second. I mean, I do think about it certainly in terms of some early cards, but still, you know, it's true. It's just, it's a very different beast and something I need to fine tune myself.
So then one of the things that I'm going to say that I think will completely like shock you, that this thing really shocked me. At this point I've played in 13 tournaments, and as soon as my round ends, I like to go stand behind someone else. And I like to like make a decision on what, like, I'm watching their hand, and I'll make a decision in my mind on what I would do if I was in their situation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so let's say I've stood behind 50 people at this point. After standing behind 50 people, I've only ran across one person that for like 5 to 10 turns, we would have made the same exact move, right? Mm-hmm. And that was actually in the round that I drew before I played in top eight. The round I drew into top eight, I walked around and watched all the opponents that I could potentially play against. Mm-hmm. And there was this one particular opponent that I was watching with one of my other friends who had top eighted. And I told him, I think that this player right here is the best player I've come across since I've been playing Lorcana, potentially because he made every single same decision I would have made while I watched him play for 20 turns or so. Mm-hmm. And that was my finals opponent.
Oh, okay.
Right. And so our games were extremely close. There was this one decision I had where I kept a flute in my hand for 4 turns and I didn't put it into play because I believed that my opponent had a B prepared, and I had to basically bait them into believing that I couldn't get one more lore. So mm-hmm. I played 2 characters. They went up to 17 lore and knocked out one of my characters when they could have B prepared and taken one more turn to knock me out, right? And the reason why I slow rolled that flute was because I thought to myself, okay, what would I not believe that my opponent is holding, right? And I thought to myself, I think that my like I would believe that my opponent, like, that I'm holding a whole new world, right? Mm-hmm. And not a flute. And so mm-hmm. I decided to hold this flute, and my opponent proceeds not to kill my character. I end up going to 19. Then I play the flute and play the Let the Storm Rage On, which gave me exactly 20. And that's how I won game 2 while I was down a match. And the whole reason I was able to come up with that entire sequence, because if I had played it 4 turns earlier, my opponent would have be prepared that turn and I would not have won that game.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so the point that I was trying to make is that I really do believe that we're nowhere near like what like the level of play that can be achieved. Because I don't think that I'm playing perfect, and I don't think that my opponent was playing exactly perfect. I think that like we're probably playing at baseline of good, and that there's a whole lot more reasoning that needs to be established, because people are inking things that they shouldn't be inking because of certain like it's so important in a certain matchup, right? And so so someone's got to be right, like not like everybody doing something different can't be the right answer, I don't think.
No, you're 100% correct about that, for sure. It'll be interesting as the game grows to see how much better we get. And of course, with so much unknown information in this game, I think it's, you know, I forget the name of the guy who, it was like a world champion though, in Magic, once said, there's no such thing as a good play, only the right play and the wrong play. I do feel like Lorcana has, like, it's probably still true, like you can boil it down to statistics and stuff, but you're going to like try to play against certain outs that your opponent may have and certain outs that you may have. Of course, if you are worried about one and they happen to have the other, you know, then it was the wrong play. But no, I definitely think we can get better.
Yeah. The thing that differentiates Lorcana from Magic is Lorcana is a simpler game, but it's infinitely harder to like to master. The reason why is because if you think about like a, let's just say you're playing mono red, right? In Magic, you go mountain on turn one. What are your choices that you can do on turn one, right?
Like to play bolt or not to bolt.
Exactly. You're gonna play like Goblin Guide or Lightning Bolt, right? Like those are your choices. Yeah, yeah. And then when you go to turn two, what are you gonna do? You're gonna play your two drop. Play a mountain, two drop, right? Like there's not that many choices that you can make. But if you just think about, like, let's say we're playing Yellow Steel, what can you do on turn one?
Yeah, you have to decide which card Cinderella. You want to ink.
Yeah.
Cinderella, Robin Hood, or the Queen?
Yeah, but the ink, the card that you ink there is more decisions than the like the entire game of Mono Red Magic.
Yeah, on the first at least turn. The first few turns, yeah.
Well, like the first turn, you just had to decide between 4, 5, 6, 7 cards, which one to ink, right? Yeah. And on turn two, you had to do the same thing. That was way more decisions than Magic already.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it is infinitely more complicated, and there is a right answer. We just have to narrow it down and figure it out.
And you skip right over the mulligan, where in Magic it's a yes or no question, and the mulligan is so hard to get right in this game. Like, you can mulligan decently, but to, like, truly know that you make the best mulligan, I don't know that I've ever made the best mulligan.
Yeah, it is. The mulligan is... Yeah, that's... So, one of the things I did was, literally the next day, I posted a mulligan guide for the deck, because people were... Because I was playing a controversial amount of uninkables, 21. And so, people were like, how do you play this deck? Does it even work? And so
does it work after you win a tournament? Does it work?
Oh yeah. I mean, I won a tournament, but it could be a total fluke. So I posted a mulligan guide, and then, you know, surely enough, number one on hardcore ladder, Yellow Steel, number two, Yellow Steel. And then now in the Discord, it's just like, oh, I won this tournament with Yellow Steel. I won this tournament with Yellow Steel. And it's just like starting to grow, because also like deck building philosophy hasn't grown yet, right? Like people had placed these like fake rules of like, oh, you shouldn't play more than 16 uninkables, right? Like every deck requires a different amount of inked cards in order to operate. And I kind of thought of Yellow Steel as kind of like a vintage deck where I could operate easily on three because I can cast all my 5-mana songs with cards that I've shifted, right? Shifted mm-hmm. Queen, shifted Robin Hood, just Ariel. So I felt like that I was just operating on different rules, and that gave me like such a huge advantage over other players because they were never willing to go above a certain amount of uninkables. What if those uninkables are the best cards and you're willing to ink whatever you need to in order to play them? And so,
coming from Magic, I firmly believe that there may be a deck where you play 30, 34 uninkables, you know, like, I mean, if you can make a Magic deck work with 24 lands, I don't see a reason that you couldn't make a Lorcana deck work with 24 inkable cards.
Yeah, I mean, Legacy is easily, you know, 16, 18 lands, you know.
Well, okay, but there's a lot of free mana that we don't currently have in Lorcana, so it's a little bit different. Sources of mana, I don't think you'll see 16 to 18.
Oh, yeah, I don't think I'm going down to that low. We're not really, really close to that, right?
No, we're not even close, but I'm saying legitimately, I do see a world where you could do 30 plus without free mana, you know, with just like you say, I don't need to get to 6 or 7. I just need to get to 3 or 4. And you're at a point where you don't care what you have to put down there. Like you just have inkable cards just as ink. I don't think there's enough cards for that to make sense now. Like Ariel is such an important card and she's inkable. So you're not going to think of her as just ink. I do think we can get to a place where we play more uninkables, and you're already doing that.
Yep. You're exactly right. And the other thing is, I think that, you know, people could be playing more than 60 cards. You know, they could play 70 cards.
Now you're getting wild. Nope. Nope. That was very controversial. Go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead, Ben.
We do have a question from Lorcana Fanatics. Yeah. They were wondering, when building and testing a deck, how do you balance all the input you receive? And do you have to process a way to iterate and test various ideas?
Yeah. So first things first, I would say, you know, becoming a patron of Pixelborn is very helpful in the data collection process, right? Because once you become a patron of Pixelborn, you can see the data of like specific matchups. So that was the first thing I did the week before the 8K. I was like, okay, you know, tournaments are becoming serious enough. I'm gonna pay $10 a month to just, I need to see this data. So that was number one. So you can manually record that data. I like to make like separate versions of the deck. So like, for example, one thing I was testing was, you know, the 4-mana Tinkerbell. It's yellow and
the 1/4 that be our guests, basically.
Exactly. Yep. I was testing a version of that with the big Tinkerbell, right? Because I think that the 2/4, the 3-mana Tinkerbell is extremely bad in a meta full of like, you know, 4/3 Madam Mims. But this 1/4 replaces itself and helps you find Aerials and helps you find the big Tinkerbell. And so I was testing a version of that. And I felt like it was really good, but I felt like, you know, if the meta was a bunch of hyper aggro decks like green purple or yellow purple or steel purple, right? If any of those hyper aggro decks were the main decks in the format, then I would opt for a shell like that. And so I made like a separate little deck thing for that. So it was recording its data against that. And so I'll get like a sample size of, let's say, 20. And then if it performs well compared to like 3 other versions, then I'll continue to test it and try to get up to like 50. And then I'll start looking at individual matchups, right? And if I have a friend that I can get to who I know is a good purple red player, I'll just play that version against purple red because I saw that it was the Tinkerbell version was performing bad against the purple red version. And if I play against someone who I know is a good player rather than a random player. Like, let's say I play 5 to 10 matches against them, then I have a good idea what I'm sacrificing in that matchup. And so I was playing Mr. Shmi over Benja for a long period of time, literally 2 days before the tournament. But what I realized was I had a 30% matchup against Blue Red, and Blue Red was becoming really, really popular. So I was on the fence of playing Purple Red myself and or Blue Red myself, either or. And I thought to myself, I have an 75 to 80% matchup against Purple Red. If I can make the Blue Red matchup a 50-50, then we'll make it happen. And so that's when I decided to add Bear Necessities, Benja, and Criminal, the world's greatest criminal. And the world's greatest criminal took out Tamatoa, and Benja helped keep all the items in check, like Lucky Dime or just like taking out any item. Maybe they don't get to go off with Heimershim. And if I'm able to hit, what is it called? The 3-mana one that lets you ink any card in your hand. Fishbone Wand.
The Fishbone Quill, yeah.
Fishbone Quill. If you can nab that with your turn two Bear Necessities, it can completely flip the matchup. Or if that's you end huge. Up hitting, yeah. Be prepared. So yeah. So basically, I felt like I made it into a 50-50 by adding these cards. And even though I made my deck slightly worse against the rest of the field, you know, from an 80% against Purple Red to 75%, I felt like, okay, I can stand up to anything in this tournament. And guess what? Round one, I played against Blue Red and I ended up beating it.
Yeah. Nice.
That I played against should have took your advice, because I beat both of them quite handily.
Yeah, you probably crushed them, because that matchup is not good.
I did.
How often do you practice with a deck that you've, like, once you've chosen that you're going to use it, how often do you practice? And, like, what do you find is the best form of practice? Just Pixelborn, or?
Yeah, Pixelborn is the best way to practice. So before I got into Lorcana, back in 2019, I actually had a pro Magic team called Team Lotus Box. And I was, like, playing on the SCG circuit and playing for the Players Championship. And I ended up being, like, the player of the year. We were living in a gamer house. And so, you know, when my livelihood was based on doing well at tournaments, you know, what I realized was, even though we lived in a house together, it took too long to make changes in your deck and test against each other. And so there was Magic Online, and then when Arena came out, it was even faster than Magic Online. So the amount of games that you can get done in an hour are infinitely faster on Magic Arena, which is the newest client. And so the same thing is true for Pixelborn. If you want to make quick changes, there's less friction. And that friction in the long term, especially if you have a limited amount of time, which, you know, now I do, you know, working a regular 9 to 5, I really only put in the week before the 8K to perfect this deck and get the result that I ended up getting, you know. And so Pixelborn is hugely instrumental if you want to gain an edge over the field. There's no other way to do it.
Even just getting rid of shuffling time, for sure. Like, even if
I didn't even touch on that.
Shuffling time is
shuffling time is crazy.
Are you planning on trying to attend any of the Lorcana challenge events?
Yeah, I mean, I was going to try to go to Atlanta, because I'm local to Atlanta, and but
still,
I mean,
going to try to go. Out. Don't give up.
Yeah, I mean, I'm on the wait list technically, right? So if they end up increasing, hopefully they'll use the wait list to fill up the rest of the slots. Yeah, I mean, I definitely want to attend. I'm not going to say I want to attend as many as possible. I want to attend the right amount that gets me qualified for NA.
Their you just want to qualify.
Yeah. I want to hit top eight. Yeah. I would love to top eight. I mean, and I think the Rapunzel is absolutely gorgeous and I would love to own one, but it's going to be hard not to sell it immediately, because I think that especially the Mickey is going to be, I mean, people are saying, like, vendors are already telling me that they would be willing to pay, you know, $10,000-$20,000 for it. So I can't imagine holding on to that. And if it ends up being that much, it might be enough of a, if I end up winning one and selling one, then I'll be really incentivized to go to the rest and trying to, you know, I mean,
that's true. It pays for the rest of your trips, yeah. Right?
Like, even more, I mean, it's profitable at that point. And I think that, I have the skills to duplicate it. I mean, Lorcana is more skill intensive than Magic. Like, you can have like an 80-90% win rate in this game easily, you know? So in Pixelborn, you're seeing a much more like concentration of the best players, but you have to realize that these challenges, they cut the other half of Pixelborn is in Europe. So it's not even all the best players, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And some of the best players in Pixelborn honestly probably don't play paper at all. They're happy to just play online.
Yeah, I'm glad that they are, because it would be so hard.
You know, there's certainly a percentage. I think most people probably do play paper as well. But I know I've certainly talked to some that have maybe been to a paper tournament, but don't really have many cards, just pretty much play online.
Yeah. My finals opponent was a player that I knew from Pixelborn. We had definitely played against each other online. And for the longest time, I didn't change my username, even though I was like top 25 for a long period of time. I just never changed my name, so they didn't know who I was, because I was the default Pixelborn name.
You have the default string of letters and numbers.
Yeah. So then some of my friends were like, we got in a Discord and they were watching me play, and they're like, Zan, aren't you a patron? Why is your name?
Well, you know, I'll say there's a bit of a there's a little bit of a strategic advantage there, though, because when somebody sees your name, they can kind of interpret what they think you're playing.
Mm-hmm. That is true. So
you leave a little mystery there, especially with Hardcore not revealing, because I haven't messed with it much, but Hardcore doesn't reveal the ink colors at the start of the game. Like, right. Okay. So yeah, I mean, there's an edge there. I think you switch it back to a random string of letters and numbers. Right.
I agree. But I think of Pixelborn as completely training, and I don't care about my rank on it.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. So if I'm thinking about it like that, I want it to be as hard as possible. And when you're thinking about the tournament, by the end of the tournament, every single person knows what you're playing and you know what they're playing, because you have enough time to go watch them.
Yeah.
So we got to be playing on hard mode when we're training. You know, it's like the DBZ mantra. You know what I mean? You just make it as freaking hard as possible.
Yeah,
no,
for sure.
I did want to ask, because you've actually gotten me back into Steel Song. So set one, I was playing Steel Song. Set two, I had like no idea what I should even play. I think I played a different deck each week. Mm-hmm. And then on this set, I was kind of like, okay, well, maybe I just finally cave in and give in to the whole Ruby Amethyst thing. And I think I played one week at League with Ruby Amethyst, and then you won the 8K there with Steel Song, and I was looking at it and I was like, you know what, I felt most comfortable and happiest playing Steel Song. Like, it just felt, it felt right. It didn't feel right playing Ruby Amethyst.
Yeah.
So I've swapped back completely, but I gotta ask, new card was revealed recently.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just gonna talk about the card first, but 6 cost, inkable, steel, 3 strength, 8 willpower, 2 lore, shift 4, with the ability amplified voice. Whenever you play a song, you may pay 2 ink to deal 3 damage to chosen character. Aerial Sonic Warrior. How many of these are you putting in your Steel Song, and what are you taking out?
Okay, so this is going to be not a great answer. I love this card, mm-hmm. but the answer for that card completely depends on what the meta looks like, right? If it's week 1, I'll probably put 2 in the deck.
Mm-hmm.
But I need to see how the rest of the meta looks like in order to determine how many you're supposed to play. Let's say it's all red purple and they're all playing 4 Madam Medusas.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a lot lower on this card, right? So I let the meta determine like what direction I end up for maybe a challenge, you know?
Yeah, I mean, Ben,
I definitely wish they had given her a little bit more strength just to make it so like Madam Medusa wasn't the option.
Yeah, just make her 4. Just make her 4.
Yeah, just make her a 4/7. Like, really, we don't care about the extra 1 willpower when you're just getting nuked by a Medusa constantly.
Yeah, I think that they did it on purpose, just because, I mean, it's got the biggest butt ever. And that butt is like, it's literally bigger than Ursula. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy. Yeah.
Needs answers.
Mm-hmm. Card is amazing. I mean,
Ben, it's a ridiculous question. You can't ask. We don't even know the rest of the set.
Hey, man, I know a lot of people that were like, I'm definitely playing that card.
No, I mean, don't get me wrong. I like that card is like a tower defense tower mm-hmm. in a card. I love the feeling of the card. But one rule that I made for Magic was I used to get super excited about spoilers and build decks. And then, you know, there'd be some uncommons that they reveal later on that would completely change all of the context, right? And what the format was going to be about. And so now what I like to do is like I like to pretend that these cards don't even exist and I don't think about them in deck building until all of the cards have been spoiled. And once all the cards are spoiled, then I understand where it fits into the format. Because if I become too hyped on a card, then it's going to really affect my deck building, which is going to affect what I end up taking to the tournament. And when we have such little tournaments and such little chances to prove ourselves or make a profit off of this game, like I don't want to be so attached to a card. And I know that sounds so lame to say, but I really want to win. I feel like it'll give me access to, you know, the best cards, like, you know, the Mickey and the Rapunzel.
Good answer. Perfect.
One thing I really miss is from Magic, which doesn't even really exist anymore in Magic, but years ago was Friday Night Magic, and having like a competitive scene that you could play weekly. And I know you kind of just alluded to that with like, hey, there's so few like real tournaments to go to. And of course, even FNM wasn't really a true tournament as much as like a bigger event, but it still was a really good way to go have some fun, play against other competitive decks. Right now, the Lorcana league structure is very much not set up. Of course, store owners could do that, but I really think we need a good name. You know, Friday Night Magic has such a good ring to it.
Yeah.
FNM. And I was wondering, do you have any great ideas for what we would call a Lorcana competitive weekly play? I had Late Night Lorcana, just trying to really steal FNM's thunder. But yeah. I was wondering if you had anything better.
I think Friday Night Magic is absolutely amazing. And that's what we're basically replicating at our local stores in Atlanta. So I've been hitting up our local store, Gubu, for the Friday, and we just replaced FN. No one's even playing Magic at this store. It's just all Lorcana. So, and it's competitive. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I would say just take their name. Just call it
Friday Night Lorcana.
Yeah, Friday Night Lorcana, or like, you know, Lorcana Friday Jam or something. I don't know.
I love it.
I mean, yeah. Essentially, it's like the same thing as like going to church, you know. It's like, but for playing card games.
Yeah, exactly.
Just, yeah, just give it Friday.
Equally, you know, as important too. Just to be clear.
No, it's a ritual, and you meet all your buddies. I love it.
Mm-hmm. That's actually the one thing. Like, obviously, I'm really excited to try and get into one of these challenges to try and get the prizes.
Yeah.
But I've never, like, I played Pokemon for a bit and Yu-Gi-Oh and Magic, but I wasn't really super competitive with it. I just played locally at stores. And I think one thing I'm kind of excited about is trying to actually get to one of these events and just like meet people, play the game, kind of see what it's all about, and just kind of have my first experience at one of these events and at, I guess, a higher competitive level.
Yeah.
Even if I just get completely destroyed, which I'm not doubting that I don't get completely destroyed, but even if I do, it's, you know, I kind of want to just meet some people, have some fun, and
yeah,
kind of go from there.
I'm an extremely competitive person, but mm-hmm. I mean, not all of my friends are extremely competitive, right? Like going to Magic GPs or Opens, I made a ton of friends who were not in the same competitive spirit or like level as me, and nor did I like have an expectation of them to be that, you know. And so I think that when you go to these events, everybody goes for their own reasons, and I think that the only warning I will say is like it's highly addictive, and make sure you like budget yourself well, because it does start to add up and you start to want to like plan out going to every single one. So yeah, right. I can't imagine someone who loves Lorcana or has played card games in the past not going to love this. I think the Atlanta one is tied with MomoCon. So you're gonna have like other people who don't even know what Lorcana is that are gonna be in the general area. So you're gonna be able to go to parties and stuff. Like there's just going to be so many events. So it's just going to be like, yeah, I can't, like, it's always like that at all of these events, and people are just so excited to hang out and mm-hmm. interact with people. Like I went, like this 8K was pretty, like it still had a lot of people that traveled from all around. Like, I don't know if I mentioned my finals opponent was from San Francisco, which is on the other side of the country. So, mm-hmm. And then there were some, my top 8 opponent was from New Jersey. I think he had won the SCG in Philly like the week before. So there were people that were traveling, and they were like, even though we had like a crazy match, they were like excited to, like, I was excited to meet them, and they were really excited to come back to Atlanta and hang out with all of us, you know? And so I think that's gonna be true for all of these challenges, you know, and hopefully mm-hmm. for the NA Nationals event that they have, and hopefully Worlds. I hope they have a Worlds at like Disney World or something, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be like such a good way to wrap everything up. Like, we get to like meet the people from the European side, you know?
Oh yeah, that'd be pretty cool. Did you end up running into Zach Bivens with his $60 deck?
I did. We played in top 4.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, he was super nice, super fantastic opponent. Played extremely, extremely well. I won the die roll against him, but he was able to steal game one against me, played out of his mind perfect. And then, mm-hmm. but the matchup is just so far in my favor. I knew exactly what I was mm-hmm. supposed to do, and I knew that in game one, like there were four or five draws that were on like the worst I could possibly have in the deck that led me to the position that ended up making me lose for Xaxes, that I knew that like I knew exactly how to mulligan against him as well, because I got to watch all of his matches because I didn't have to play in round eight, right? So mm-hmm. I knew exactly what was in his deck and how I was trying to think about, okay, how is he gonna approach me? He did ended up like getting me on that game one with the he like befuddled my Robin Hood, which on my turn two, which meant that I couldn't shift it on turn three, which was extremely smart and exactly what he was supposed to do. But yeah, he was a super cool guy. Really enjoyed playing against him, and his deck was really cool. Nice. But
yeah, I was kind of blown away that a deck that cheap got so far, and I think that's kind of it's almost like a testament to the game. Like you don't need to be blowing tons of money on cards to get far. You just have to know what you're doing, know how to play,
yeah,
have some skill.
No, for sure. I will say, I think that if Yellow Steel is a bigger percentage than it was in that tournament, it's going to be harder to climb with that Purple Steel deck just because the matchup is so lopsided. I would say I'm like 80 to 85% in that matchup, if not more.
Mm-hmm. I think the matchup probably it does better against the Ruby Amethyst there, probably.
Yeah, and they've lost a lot of stock. But I think that it's well positioned against Blue Red as well.
Yeah, it's just nice to kind of see that there's a lot of diversity now instead of just set twos, nonstop Ruby Amethyst that we were going for a while there. It's great to see that other colors are doing really well.
Oh yeah, I mean the future of like the card design, super bright.
Mm-hmm. All right, Charles, you want to crack some packs? You want to talk about anything?
Yeah, let's break it back. I don't want. There, you know, there was so much in the Lorecast cover. I think we'll cover a lot of it next week. I wanted to kind of keep it more just on the competitive side of the discussion tonight for Zan's time. I know he's kind of running out of time here. But we should crack a pack, as is our ritual. Zan, do you have a pack by chance? Or did you crack
one? I don't have a pack, but I would be happy to check out y'all's packs.
To vicariously right. experience through us.
I'll crack first because I've already ripped it open. I was ready to go.
Okay.
I spent all my money on, you know, some enchanteds.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You didn't even buy packs. You just bought the enchanteds.
I just straight bought the enchanteds.
I've got Moana, Underrated Voyager, Cubby, Mighty Lost Boy, Diablo, Faithful Pet, Pluto, Mickey's Clever Friend, Kita, Royal Warrior, Joshua Sweet, The Doctor, Slightly Lost Boy. Genie Cramped in the Lamp, Captain Hook's Rapier, and Maui's Fish Hook for the first rare, followed by a Robin Hood Daydreamer. And it looks like we got a common foil here with Webby Vanderquack.
Nice.
You know,
well,
Robin
it's easy
Hood...
to say what my favorite card is.
What is it?
Yeah, the Daydreamer.
It's that Robin Hood.
Oh,
those Robin Hood.
It's that art.
Oh, I think it's Robin a good Hood. Card too. I don't think it's gotten enough love yet for Lorequester for six. It's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. I definitely used it in the recent webcam tournament that we did.
Oh, nice. Well, what were the stats on that card again?
It's a 4/5 for six with four lore.
Yeah.
I love that fish hook. Fish hook. That card completely caught me off guard on how good it was. And I think Maui's stock has gone up so much. The next set of enchanteds that I want to go for are the Maui enchanteds. I think that they're extremely low for the amount of play that they see and how amazing the art's amazing too. So
Yeah. That's definitely one I still have to add to my collection. I'm just kind of surprised I haven't with how low they are right now.
Yeah, I think that last time I checked they were 85, which is like so cheap for a card that good of a card.
Yeah, I have a Madam Mim Purple Dragon that I was trying to flog for any of the first chapter in enchanted. So I was looking for like Aladdin or Maui because I know those are like the two cheapest.
Yeah.
But I've also got an Alice Enchanted.
Ooh, nice.
And a Maleficent from this set that I'm like, if I could get anything from the first set, I might be willing to let those go.
Oh, yeah. Dang.
All right, let's see what I get here. I got Kida.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Karkamora. Sir Hiss. Iago. Maid Marian. Cleansing Rainwater. Maui. The bird dude. Soaring Demigod. Scrooge McDuck. Rise of the Titans. Starlight Vial. And a Pride Lands. And a foil Stitch little rocket.
Mm. Ooh,
nice.
I like, you know, the Stitch.
I like the Pride Lands. It's not a good deck, but the meme deck of like Pride Lands plus Rockstar Stitch equals play your whole deck.
I love Pride Lands. There's a yellow steel deck that is not Flute, but with Pride Lands and Simba. The one mana Simba. That deck is really good. It is really good. Mm-hmm. The problem with that version of the deck is that it's not good against purple red, but it's good against everything else. So let's say I was playing in a tournament tomorrow and it was going to be 50% blue red, I would play the Pride Lands version.
Mm. I see. It does nasty. Better into that matchup. Yeah.
It is super nasty.
I had one game where I had played with Pride Lands. It wasn't probably the exact same deck, but I was playing Steel Song as well, Pride Lands, Pluto, and Simba. Mm-hmm. And I was able to get down 5 cards real quick. And my opponent's just like, oh, man, you are getting cards down. I think I'm in trouble here. And then he just drew into that Scar that has Rush and just keeps getting to re-ready. And I'm sitting there with all these like little 1/1/2 and like 3 willpower. And he just smashed everything out. And I was like, I don't even want to play the second game. He's like, no, come on, we'll play the second game. I'm like, okay. Play the second game, same thing ended up happening. He drew into the Scar again, just wiped the board, and I was just like, this sucks. I hate this game.
Vicious Cheater is a very fun card to play, yeah.
Mm-hmm. The Scar has gotten a lot better because like Rush has just gotten so much better. Locations.
It has 2 lore, you know, so if it does stick around past the turn, it rushes out, you know. It's still a questing threat as well. Just and people are learning that you can play more than 1/7 cost uninkable, you know, as you were talking about earlier. It's like, yeah, you can play Be Prepared and Scars, actually. It's fine. It'll be okay.
All right. Well, let's wrap it up so you can get out of here and get to bed here.
Well, I appreciate you guys having me.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on.
If you have any socials or anything that you want to shout out, feel free.
Join the podcast. I mean, join the Discord, which is, what did I name it again? Oh, yeah. Club Lorcana. Club Lorcana Discord. And you can find that, I guess, on my Twitter, Zan, @Zan_ say it. Pretty sure.
Perfect. All right. Well, thank you for coming on and discussing decks and tournaments and trying to make me a better player a little bit. Hopefully helping out some other people out there.
Yeah, I can't wait to meet you guys in at one of these challenges. Maybe I'll see you guys in Seattle.
Come out.
Oh, no.
Come out.
Got a guest room. I want somewhat of a chance here.
You can bunk up if you don't want to get a hotel room, you know. Although you'll probably be a fat cat having already sold one of your brave little tailors, and you'll be at a 5-star resort hotel. You know,
first, just get me into Atlanta so I have a chance at winning one of those.
Yeah, perfect.
I feel like I have to enter the lottery system to be able to even play in one.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy. I hope they kind of get it under wraps and figure out a better way of selling tickets, because there's got to be some bots in there.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
All right. Well, Thank you for tuning in and venturing out with us on this magical journey. Check out our Discord in the show notes, and you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at overexertedcast. Have a great week, and we hope to see you again soon.
Have a great week, everyone.
All right. Bye, guys.
Bye. Have a good one.
Thanks, man.